Fun fact. Bubble tea originated in Taiwan in the early 1980s, but the Hong Kong style milk tea was famous for using black tea and condensed milk instead of just regular milk and sugar.
I love that. Like, it's so bad for you, but it's so good.
It's great. I love bubble tea.
Because it's a lot. It's a ton of, like, condensed
milk. Yeah, and we call it bubble tea. I know, like, Americans call it boba.
Oh. Oh. I didn't know that was a thing. I thought you could just use it interchangeably.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Lol.
Oh. Well, bubble tea is, like, the more common name here. I think it's only been a little more popularized since, you know, like, subtle Asian traits?
Yeah.
They tend to use it interchangeably there, and then I think it was more popularized to say boba because of that. Yeah.
Interesting.
More recently, at least, from my experience. But yeah.
Yeah.
In Canada, we tend to say bubble tea.
Yeah. And then we tell people, hey, do you want to go for some BBT? Like, because it's just tea. So that's interesting. Cool. You know that.
Yeah. I know in, like, California, I would say bubble tea, and they're like, you mean boba?
Okay. Okay, chill.
Hi! I'm Tammy.
I'm Leanne.
And you're listening to Incrimination.
Do we have anything to cover today before we get into the case?
I think we got a DM. I don't know if you saw it. I left it for you.
Oh, I'll read it out loud for everyone on the podcast so we can experience this live. So this is from one of our...
Yeah.
What the heck?
Yeah.
Oh my god, okay, so I'll read this out loud. Humans of Bombay did an interview with Sabrina Lal, who is Jessica Lal's sister, from our case, like, I think almost a month ago, maybe more than that.
Probably. I don't remember, to be honest.
Anyways, go check out that episode. But she just sent us, like, a post from the Humans of Bombay, where they did, like, a feature from Jessica Lal's sister. Okay, the feature is basically Jessica Lal's sister telling the story of how she found out about her, like, about Jessica being shot and, like, kind of the aftermath of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's cool. Thank you. Well, let's get started with today's case. So,
yes.
Of course, you can tell by the title of the case that we're covering the milkshake murders today. And there was actually another case that is going by the same name that took place, I think, in Vancouver. That's not the one we're covering. The one that we're covering today takes place in Hong Kong back in 2003.
What happened in Vancouver?
I don't know. I didn't dive too deep into that. It was something similar to what happens in this case and why it became known as the milkshake murders, but it happened to, like, a different family.
That's fucky.
I know.
I don't know what happens in this case, so...
Okay, well, it'll become, like, very clear very soon, like, why it's called this. But, it's kind of... I really like the title. It just reminds me of the song, My Milkshake Brings Out the Moist. Yeah, okay. Anyways.
It's better than yours. Na, na,
na. All right, we'll stop. For your sake, we will stop. All right. The main source of today's case is just a collection of articles written by BBC and then some random, like, Nancy Grace transcripts that I found from CNN posted back in 2014. So trying to piece all this stuff together. And just to mention, this will be a two-parter. So today's part will be talking about specifically the milkshake murder. And then the next part in 2 weeks from now will be covering... sort of like a related case. I'll talk about it a little bit later at the end of the case when I transition into the next episode. But just as a heads up.
So that we won't be left on, like, any weird cliffhangers from this episode.
You won't. Though. You won't. Like, this case itself will be resolved. Don't worry.
Wow, how much nice. How nice.
I won't do that.
I love making cliffhangers.
Yeah. Hi, Artie. Nancy and Robert Kissel are the main kind of characters or people involved in today's case, and they met back in 1987 in New York City and got married in 1989, so within, like, 2 years. It was said that they, like, really fell in love with each other really quickly as well, so there was that. Robert Kissel was climbing the corporate ladder. He started working with Goldman Sachs and eventually switched over to working with Merrill Lynch. And if you don't know, these
are those?
If you don't know, these two are like really relatively, actually not relatively, they're really big like investment banks in America and like across the world as well. So they do have like a reputation, obviously, but I don't know if you've seen it in the news recently. There's a bunch of like interns from Goldman Sachs who have been complaining about their like unreasonable and inhumane.
Oh, I have.
Yeah. Yeah. So
like crazy work hours, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think they got like 5 hours of sleep every night, at most. And then they were working around the clock because the investment banker life is kind of insane. Eventually, Robert became the managing director of global investments at Merrill Lynch in 2000. And that was what made them have to move to Hong Kong, because that was where the position was. And as many expats do, Robert and Nancy lived in a very luxurious apartment complex that costed around $20,000 a month. I think that's
cat?
In USD.
Damn.
Yeah. And it
so that's like $30,000.
Yeah. Cat. It had a view of the ocean, and they also had a lot of, like, servants at their kind of beck and call. So it was very luxurious, like, very, you know, rich people life.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. And super so at white. The time of our case, Robert Kissel, so the time of our case specifically is 2003. That's when this milkshake murder happens.
How
Robert
old
Kissel, yeah. Robert Kissel was 40 years old, and Nancy Kissel was around 39 years old. Together, at this point, they already had 3 kids. And I couldn't really figure out whether or not their kids were with them in Hong Kong or whether they were, like, back in the States. But
okay.
That is just, like, something to keep in mind. And I will kind of circle back to their kids after.
Okay.
According to the Irish Times, Nancy was a very well-presented person. So she was your classic quintessential mom, like, bring your kids to school, show up on time to, like, pick up your kids. Like, she had a good reputation of, like, being a good parent, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
While Robert worked around the clock as an executive, Nancy was volunteering at the Hong Kong International School. Other than that, she kind of just spent her days basically spending the money that her husband was earning. And while that may sound nice, like, obviously, like, oh, cool, well, you just have, like, a lot of money to spend on different, like, luxury items and things like that. For her, it almost felt, like, very unfulfilling and kind of boring, which is a very privileged thing to, like, say, too. But, like, she didn't have anything that she wanted to do or, like, could do because she was just there. And then she felt like, okay, I guess I'll just spend money because, like, what else am I going to do with my time kind of thing.
She had, like, no passions or anything.
Yeah. And so, as I mentioned, they lived in a very luxurious apartment, and this was known as the Parkview Apartments Complex. This area in general had a reputation with the local population in Hong Kong as having a very lavish and very wealthy lifestyle, but it was also a neighborhood that was rampant with adultery, drugs, abuse, greed, and general unhappiness, just because everyone there was probably working some, like, high-paying job, which required them to work around the clock, which then often leads to drug and alcohol abuse, which then leads to, like, unhappiness with life. So it had
so, like,
this reputation.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Yes.
Hong Kong.
Yes. Basically. And unfortunately, even though Robert and Nancy seem to have a very well-off or successful life, it was pretty far from that. Apparently, once they moved to Hong Kong, Robert began drinking a lot, and he also started using cocaine. With that kind of concoction flowing through his body, he would often become violent and controlling with Nancy and even force her into having anal sex with him. And at first I was like, why specifically anal?
Yeah.
Right? And I saw one report of him mention that he was actually gay and he started watching gay porn quite often, like, while they were in Hong Kong, and that was sort of like where the fascination, I guess, came from, or like the desire came from to specifically have anal sex. But yeah, I was like, okay. That was
anal sex
specific.
You also, like, don't look them in the face.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, so maybe that was one thing where he, like, was like, okay, maybe. Cool. Don't have to look her in the face.
Yeah.
So this is sort of like, that's all the background on them that I could really find in terms of their life together. But that's something to keep in mind, was that he did become quite violent with her, as like several reports claim, and that she was also sort of just there, almost like not doing anything, and she was feeling very unfulfilled. Mm-hmm. So in November of 2003, and this part is why this is known as the milkshake murder, Nancy gave her husband, Robert, a strawberry milkshake. But mixed in with the strawberry milkshake was a cocktail of drugs, including antidepressants, hypnotics, sedatives, and also a date rape drug known as Rohypnol. Sorry, I forgot. Roofies. Yeah, I forgot for a second. I was like, how the hell do I pronounce this? While Robert was passed out, she used a heavy statuette, or basically like a bust, to repeatedly hit him over the head, just to like take him out. And then she tried to dispose of his body by rolling it up in a carpet and putting it in the storage room of the apartment complex.
Oh man.
That ain't disposal, honey, because that's still going to be there.
Yeah. Ew.
And based on the Irish
Times... How old were they at this point?
40 and 39. Like, that was... Or... Yeah, 40 and 39 at the time of the murder.
Okay.
Yeah. And based on the Irish Times, the autopsy showed that Robert received a total of 5 blows to the head. So, yeah. I mean, the bust is pretty heavy, so, like, it doesn't take that much to really... imagine. Take someone out. Well, as we know, and as we expect, if you're going to just put a body there and not do anything about it, the stench of a decaying body is undeniable. Like, you can tell, and it's gross, and people will go and, like, check it out. And so it was eventually discovered just 3 days later. There are also reports that Nancy herself had actually asked a maintenance crew to come and take the carpet away for her.
Oh my god.
Which would be dumb. But regardless of, like, how it was discovered, she was immediately the prime suspect in the case. Because, you know, when they talk about, like, a crime of passion and things like that, like, you can kind of... I mean, the bashing of the head is, like, very... Very violent.
Someone had to have been really mad to bash someone on the head with a statuette 5 times.
Yeah, basically.
And that's personal.
Yeah, that feels personal. So throughout the trial process, there were more details that were revealed about the life that Nancy and Robert lived. Although Nancy admitted to killing him, she claimed that it was out of self-defense. And her defense lawyer, Simon Clark, argued that her actions were taken after having suffered the abuse and violence of her husband. According to the Irish Times, Nancy claimed that Robert had actually threatened to file for divorce and would also take the 3 kids away with him, which is, like, very, again, like, maybe that field of passionate and, like, the personal vindication sort of feeling that Nancy had, because I think, like, having your kids taken away is just something that, like, most mothers are like, no, fuck you. And the reason for the divorce was because... This, like, Robert discovered, there's, like, a lot of fucked up, like, weird things. Like, every time I'm like, wow, that's such a weird person thing. The reason for the divorce was because Robert discovered that Nancy was having an affair with a TV repairman from Vermont.
What?
So I'll get to that. Vermont in the States.
No, but, like, wait, how is she having an affair?
I'll get to that. So... Basically, she had met this man earlier in the year when she had to take her children back to the States to their vacation home. Because, remember, 2003 was the breakout of the SARS epidemic. So she was taking them back to Vermont, and maybe she had been there for a couple months, met a TV repairman, had an affair. Probably, maybe, like, continued the affair as well, just through, like, common communication, like phone calls or whatever.
Yeah, video calls.
Yeah, I don't think that was a thing.
All the time these days.
I don't think it existed back then, though. 2003.
Oh, when was this? Oh, 2003. Was there not? I feel like MSN had...
I don't know. I was, like, what, 5 in 2003? I have no clue.
I'm sure, like, webcams were a thing.
For rich people, probably. That would make sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so Robert, after a while, had actually hired a private investigator after seeing some of her internet searches for sedatives because he became scared that she was about to kill him.
Oh, man.
But she also sort of tried to explain that as, oh, I was just having trouble sleeping, so I was trying to look for sedatives for myself. But nonetheless, he hired a fucking private investigator for his own wife, which is, you know,
that's obviously cool. The PI didn't do a very good job.
Yeah, because he fucking died anyways. She said that when she started asking about the divorce, because he had threatened, like, the divorce. And this was sort of, like, the big fight that led to the murder itself. Mm-hmm. When she started asking about it, he began threatening her with a bat. And that was kind of her breaking point of being like, I can't live with this anymore. And what led her to eventually make that concoction.
Uh-huh.
Even with all of this, in terms of, like, her explanation of what happened, the prosecution countered, saying that she should be sentenced for murder because it seemed like a premeditated kill rather than one out of self-defense, at least in that moment. Because, like, you have to kind of think about, I don't know, I feel like self-defense for me is more of a physical thing where, like, if someone's coming at me and I stab them with a knife, that's self-defense. Yeah. But if I'm making a smoothie, that's, like, very intentional. Yeah.
And that means you had time to, like, leave.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There wasn't an imminent danger to you at that moment. Like, yes, maybe, like, the first time, but if he was threatening you with a bat, but at that point, like, there were other options.
Yeah.
Because, like, self-defense is when you feel like you have no other option, right?
Yeah. Or it's, like, in the moment and someone's coming at you with a knife, mm-hmm. and then you come back at them with a knife, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why that's the image in my head, but it is.
I have no idea either, Leanne.
Yeah, cool. Anyways. Eventually, in September of 2005, so this is 2 years later, or almost 2 years, she was found guilty by the jury and ultimately sentenced to life. However, as most times is done, she filed for an appeal as well.
Mm-hmm.
So next, we'll talk about some of the retrials and some of the other stuff that came up. In 2008, she lost her appeal where she was trying to claim self-defense because, you know, kind of what we've been talking about. Basically, prosecutors actually said that she had planned the murder because she was having her affair. Like, that was the motive. And they stated that the motive for killing her husband was because there was an opportunity to get up to $18 million in life insurance claims. And I'm assuming this is in USD since, like, their insurance
would be with. That's a lot of fucking money.
That's a lot of money, yeah. It's a ton of money.
But how would you claim life insurance if you're the one that bashed him in the head and stuffed him in a closet?
Like, I'm not murder is wrong, but I'm like, at least do a better job at it. This is a controversial thing to say, but, like, it is wrong. I'm not, like, saying, like, murder, but, like, if you're gonna do it, like, you can't get life insurance if you're the one who, like, murdered your husband.
I felt bad for her at first, but...
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. And then...
They're both.
So after she lost this appeal, she tried to, like, take it further as well. But as expected, because of the area they lived in already attracted a lot of attention because the locals just wanted to, like, know what the latest gossip was and, like, be in on the tea and be like, haha, how are these people?
They're kind of like socialites, right?
Yeah, like, you want to know how, it's kind of like you enjoy watching their life from the outside, seeing it, like, these really successful people have such, like, shitty personal lives, basically.
That's the entire culture around, like, paparazzi and celebrities.
Yeah, exactly. So... Because there was a lot of public attention around it, and we've seen this in our other cases as well, this can often impact the case itself.
Right.
So in February of 2010, this is, like, what, 2 years after she lost the first appeal, the Hong Kong Court of Final Appeal overturned her life sentence, with the Chief Justice Andrew Lee saying that the court unanimously allows the appeal, quashes the conviction, and orders a retrial. Basically claiming quashes.
What's quashes?
Like, stamps down the conviction, like, to overturn the conviction.
How do you spell that?
Like, squashes without an S.
Huh, I've never heard that word before.
Yeah. Basically, they claimed that the jury could have been influenced by the heavy media attention and also claimed a breach of rules in handling evidence.
Okay.
According to a Reuters article written in 2017, it stated that she was convicted again anyways in 2011 during her retrial and then failed a final appeal in 2014. In this same article, it also states that she was once again trying to appeal her life sentence. So this is back in 2017, and I haven't really been able to find a more updated article about where she's at in her appeal,
mm-hmm.
what's happening there, like anything at all. So it'll be kind of interesting to keep an eye on it and see where it goes. So in an article from New York Times that I was reading, this is more of an update on the state of their children. So as I mentioned earlier, they had three kids together. And at the time of the murder itself, they were 11, 8, and 6 years old. So they were pretty young.
They were babies.
Yeah. So back in 2003, so now 2003, just basically add like 18 years to all of those ages.
So they're like 26, 24 is the youngest, right?
11, yeah, 24 is the youngest. Yeah. So they're adults now, but back then they were super
young.
Wow,
that's my age.
Yeah, imagine. But the thing too is during the actual murder, at least they weren't there for it. Like they were in Vermont, like they were back in the States, and they weren't there to be in that presence of that violence.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. While Nancy was going through her first set of trials, their children stayed at home with Andrew Kissel, who is Robert's brother, and his wife, Haley Wolf Kissel. However, this couple, so Andrew and Haley, like basically their aunt and uncle, they were also experiencing issues, and they filed for divorce a couple of years later. And on top of that, Andrew, the husband, was charged with several instances of fraud.
Oh, no.
So this family is just sort of like, seems like they're pretty mixed up in just bad shit.
Yeah. So the dads are brothers?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, the men are brothers?
Yeah.
Oh, husbands?
Yeah.
I wonder if that's like a hereditary thing that they're like prone to.
But I think I read in one article, or in the same New York Times article, a little bit about their dad. And maybe that'll be something that I can include in next week's, or next episode, to talk a little bit about their background. So Robert and Andrew, who were brothers.
Nice.
So after all of this is like happening, they get divorced and like, obviously the kids are already in a very like fragile state with their parents, like, their mom just murdered their dad. Now they're staying with their aunt and their uncle. And then now their aunt and uncle are getting divorced. And now they're like,
rough.
Great. And they're super young still. And so basically Robert's sister, so Robert has a brother who is Andrew, who's the one getting divorced. He also has a sister named Jane Kissel Clayton.
Okay.
Jane started petitioning for herself to assume guardianship of the children. But this was met with a lot of disagreement from their aunt, Haley, because she just didn't want to give them up, I guess. Like, maybe she just felt close with them. I don't know. She just didn't want to. And Nancy herself was also in prison, but she also was like, no, like, I don't want my children to be moved around so much, especially since they're so young. And she just was, like, really against it. And she also claimed that Seattle has nothing to offer to her children. So this is because Jane, who is trying to like assume guardianship of the children, like they live in Seattle, but like Jane and her husband was an executive at Microsoft at the time, so it's like, dude, she could take care of your fucking children, right?
Yeah.
So Jane was like, no. So she kept fighting back against this notion, saying that all Nancy was trying to do was that she wanted to hang on to her children and not, like, let someone else assume guardianship over them, because they had, like, collectively, they had an inheritance somewhere between $10 to $15 million USD.
Oh my god.
So, this bitch really out here being like, okay, I killed my husband because it was out of self-defense, but it possibly could be because of the life insurance at $18 million, and then now is the other part of it where Like, she's not letting someone else who is more, like, who has a stable situation take care of her children. Possibly because they had an inheritance somewhere between 10 to 15 million. So it seems like she's sort of just, like, driven by money. But eventually, thankfully, an agreement was made and the children were transferred to Jane and her husband in December 21st of 2005, which is really nice because it's, like, right before Christmas. So at least they could have had something nice. And that's where I'll leave it off. I don't have any more information about the children themselves, but hopefully they're living a good life. I mean, they're around our age, if not, like, a bit older as well.
Yeah. So wishing them well.
Yeah. Definitely hope they're living a better life than kind of what their family got mixed up in.
Wow. That, I don't know why I expected a little more, because I thought it was the Milkshake Murders, plural.
Yeah.
So I was expecting, like, a mass, like, carnage of
just this lady strawberry going around shake. Hong Kong selling milkshakes.
I mean, that's where I thought you were going. I thought it was going to be, like, a cyanide witch situation.
That would have been, like, cool. I actually think the milkshake murder in Vancouver is, like, I think they laced it with cyanide. I don't think it was sedatives for that one. I think that one was cyanide.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Cyanide's very popular.
I mean, it gets the job done.
Yeah. Don't do that, though. Don't. We're not condoning that.
Don't do it.
That's where I'll leave it off for this week's episode. The next episode, I'll actually talk about Andrew Kissel. So when I mentioned before that he was involved or charged with several instances of fraud, this leads him down a similar fate as his brother. So we'll cover that in the next episode.
It's so weird because usually it's like they're both the bad guy. Like, but this family is just, like, really unlucky. Maybe they, like, you could arguably say that they put themselves in, like, those situations, but I'm not gonna, like, victim blame or anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's just really unfortunate.
They're just very, this is a very crazy complex family, too, I think.
Yeah. Which tends to happen, I think.
Yeah. Because the thing is, Robert was very violent, but Nancy also murdered him.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like, is there really, this is where I'm, like, there's so much gray area, right? You can't just be like, this was right and wrong. This was, like, whatever, right? Like, she murdered him, that's wrong.
Yeah.
He was murder violent, that's wrong.
Yes, yes. So, you're allowed to have two bad guys.
Yeah.
No good guys in a case. Like,
yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much, Leanne, for that case. I can't wait to hear what happens to Richard. Is that his name?
Andrew.
Andrew, fuck. Who's Richard?
No one.
There's no Richard
Robert,
in this
Robert
case.
Is...
Robert.
Close enough. It's the R names. Yeah.
Robert and... Who was it?
Andrew.
Sorry. Yes. Can't wait to hear what happens to Andrew next week. Or not next week. We always fuck that up.
I know.
We're a bi-weekly podcast. Yeah. Not a weekly podcast.
In two weeks.
But yeah, thank you so much. If you want to check out Leanne's case notes and the articles that she used, feel free to tap on that link in our description. As well as follow us on Instagram at Incrimination. And the link to the show notes is Incrimination.
Bit.ly.
The link to our show notes is bit.ly/incrimination. And follow me on TikTok.
Oh my god. Yes. Well, we'll link that too.
Don't actually. Maybe one day I'll share my TikTok. But
yeah.
If you find me.
Follow me.
Then you find me.
And then you follow her.
Yeah, and then you follow me. I'm painting my longboard right now. It's a process.
Love it.
I'm documenting it on TikTok. I think it'll be fun.
Yeah. No. I'll enjoy the content.
Awesome.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm actually going to go paint it right after this.
Okay. Sounds good. I'll go and edit this podcast.
Okay. Nice.
Okay.
Talk to you then.
Okay.
Bye.